Welcome back to 770CHQR and More Than Money. And, well, there's a little topic that keeps on coming up in the news.
There is. Well, I'm trying to be, you know, a little coy about it, but really, I think it comes down to what's going on in the United States is one of the main concerns.
What an entertaining reality series we call the election happening there.
Well, wouldn't you say it's 11 days now, Faisal, since the election took place?
Yeah, it's amazing.
It is. And yet we think we have a president-elect.
We think. We hope.
We hope.
We have no idea.
But yeah.
Who knows?
Exactly.
Who knows? And so let's make sense of this. So we have Lori Williams, associate professor. She teaches policy studies and politics at the Mount Royal University. Lori, welcome to the show.
Oh, I'm great to be here.
Okay, let's kind of break it down. What's happening with the American election right now?
Well, I mean, the election is decided. It's just a matter of whether or not the current president and some members of the Republican Party are willing to acknowledge it. So what's, I mean, more world leaders have recognized the president-elect than Republicans in Washington, which is a bit of an odd thing. But the reality is, going forward, what's going to happen is there may be recounts in Georgia for sure. I think they're still going to do recounts in Pennsylvania, but once that's done and the elections are certified, that's all sort of legally in place, and then it's basically inexorably going to be January 20th, Joe Biden will be president. And the only question is whether or not, or when, I guess, the current president will recognize that and provide the president's daily briefings and so forth to the president-elect.
You know, and Lori, a big question that's coming out in the media right now and everything is, what happens if President Donald Trump refuses to succeed or concede,
well, I mean,
I should say.
It's not his choice. Mm-hmm. The powers he has are constitutional powers that belong to him as a result of being elected by the majority of electors in the Electoral College in 2016. And those expire on January 20th at noon. Now, I suppose he could try to say he won't leave the White House, but it doesn't matter. The powers aren't his anymore. The authority that belongs to the president will go to Joe Biden. He will be sworn in, and whether that happens in one place or another is entirely irrelevant. It's going to go forward, and it's impossible for Donald Trump to do anything about that.
Lori, as Canadians, we sometimes don't understand the difference in political systems between the presidents and what happens in the United States, and also what happens here in Canada as a prime minister, and the amount of power that each of these two individuals, the prime minister versus the president, has. What's the big differences between the two systems, and which one do you prefer?
Well, this, I've been talking, as you can imagine, a great deal about this to a lot of my students who have questions about it as well. The presidential powers in the United States derive actually largely from the stuff that is not written and the fact that the United States is such a powerful country. So there are all kinds of checks and balances that exist in the United States. So the president cannot introduce legislation directly into the legislative branch. He has to be invited into Congress in order to deliver the State of the Union address. Basically, legislation is up to Congress. They, in the Senate and the House of Representatives, if they pass legislation in the same form in both houses, it goes to the president, and the president then decides to sign the legislation, not to sign the legislation, and it becomes law anyway in 10 days, or he can veto the legislation. But if the House and the Senate pass a law by a two-thirds majority, then that is either veto-proof or can override a presidential veto. All of the appointments that the president makes, senior bureaucratic appointments and judges, as we've seen, those have to be approved by the Senate. So there are, at least in a functioning presidential system, the legislative branch exercises significant checks on the executive. And then, of course, the courts can review matters as well. So that is another factor that impacts it. The only way to remove a president between elections is by impeachment, as we've seen. And, of course, impeachment involves the actual impeachment that happens in the House of Representatives, and then a trial that that happens in the Senate. And if two-thirds of the senators vote to convict the president, then they remove him from office. Whereas in Canada, I mean, most people know the prime minister, if the prime minister has control or the majority in the House of Commons, he or she basically runs the legislative as well as the executive branch. But the House can remove a prime minister basically by a vote of confidence and force an election. The party can, the members of the party in Ottawa can basically force a prime minister to resign if he loses their support. So the levers for limiting the power of a prime minister are, I guess, more informal but and can be effective. But, of course, a very strong leader, whether a president or a prime minister, in many respects controls the party because of all of the sort of the direct contact with levers of power, with the media, the ability to influence policy and so forth. A great deal is in the hands of the president and the prime minister.
Which system do you prefer, Laurie?
Well, I suppose I've seen the prime ministerial system for a long time. I've seen maybe not as often in Canada as in the UK, where the number of members of the party is higher and it's just harder to control. But I have seen prime ministers who have lost support being forced out of office without needing to have an election. They just change, have a leadership convention, and they bring in a new leader. So the fact that, I mean, we even saw this with Alison Redford in Alberta. The mm-hmm. party ceased to support her, and she was forced to leave the leadership. So the fact that there are, it looks like it's a little easier to deal with deep dissatisfaction with a leader, that seems to me, especially given the possibility of abuse of power and what we've recently witnessed in the United States, looks to me like, at least theoretically, the prime ministerial system is, or the parliamentary system is preferable, just because there seems to be a little, at least the possibility of informal limitations on prime ministerial power.
Well, and I guess the big question that we have to ask today is, you know, we're in Alberta, Joe Biden has been elected, or is the president-elect. What do you think the effect of Albertans, or what will the effect of a Biden presidency happen to Alberta and then Canada as well?
It's a little bit difficult to be absolutely certain. The one thing that, as we're seeing with all of the world leaders and their responses, and even people, and ringing church bells in France, the world seems to be relieved that, maybe even overjoyed, that there is going to be some kind of stability and willingness to work with other countries to stand with allies, and so that stability in terms of international alliances will be restored. The relationship between Canada and the United States, which, let's face it, is largely an institutional one. It ticked along reasonably well day to day, even though there was all kinds of bluster coming from the president. That relationship continued quite effectively for most of his presidency. And when he did things like threatening or imposing tariffs, there were very significant levers that could be exercised by the Canadian government to try to exert pressure from below, if you like. So through the governors of states that he needed to win in the next election, through legislators in Washington, people in the government bureaucracy and so forth, it was possible to exert some pressure to try to move the policy in a different direction. And we saw this quite directly when the election was underway and Donald Trump was threatening to impose aluminum tariffs and basically back down at the last minute because he realized that it could affect his chances of re-election. So I mean, it's really important to understand, as powerful as the president is, there are also very powerful interests that can put significant pressure to move policies in a different direction. And the Canadian government proved itself extraordinarily skilled at managing that, just remaining calm, working the various influences that they could during this presidency, doing that internationally as well, and other leaders were doing similar sorts of things. Joe Biden will prioritize the relationship of Canada with the United States, just as we've seen with presidents in the past, but he is similar to Donald Trump in that he is an America first president. He is somewhat protectionist. And that could have impacts on some of the trade between Canada and the United States. And, of course, he is an environmentalist, and he has said that he does not support the Keystone XL pipeline. That could have an impact. But, again, those same levers we talked about, the trade unions, for example, who are in favor of the pipeline, the jobs that could be associated with it. So it's possible that a compromise could be struck if the Alberta government persuaded the president-elect that the environmental energy balance that has been struck in Alberta, there have been significant innovations in the oil industry in terms of being environmentally more responsible.
Yeah.
If those are sufficient to persuade the president-elect, then it's possible that Keystone XL could continue construction, but it's not just up to him. There's a court order that's currently stopped that construction at the moment. So that's quite quite a complex file, and I think a little less predictable because of it.
Laurie, we can talk about this for hours and hours upon this.
Yeah.
It's going to be very interesting to see what happens up until inauguration date in the U.S. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, it's been my great pleasure. Thank you.
We've been joined by Laurie Williams, associate professor. She teaches policy studies at the Mount Royal University. Politics is a big issue. It impacts to some degree economics. And we're going to talk about how do you protect your retirement through all this volatile time. We're going to talk about that on Tuesday, November 17th, 7 p.m., live online. You need to register for this webinar. Go to morethanmoneyradio.com to register. That's morethanmoneyradio.com to register. Okay, stay tuned after the break. We're going to find out that there is a lot more fraud happening in this province. How do you protect yourself? Come back after the break. You're joining us at More Than Money and 770 CHQR.